Okay. This is Bruce Bostic with Labor Creates All Wealth again, and we want to welcome Deidre Reis with us. Thanks so much for coming on, Dee.
Thank you for having me, Bruce.
Deidre is the outreach coordinator for the Ohio AFL-CIO, and that's doing an awful lot of coordination and an awful lot of outreaching right now. One of the key areas that Deidre is working on is something that's very, very important to all Americans, and that's voting rights. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Dee, there's been a development where, I'll say it, Republican-dominated legislators have passed a series of laws that we're calling voter suppression laws.
Yes.
Could you go into that a little bit about how that affects us here in Ohio and why we're calling them voter suppression laws and kind of where we are a little bit on that?
Absolutely. We certainly have seen a lot of energy around the country, but particularly here in Ohio, with legislation being introduced that really is either denying people the right to vote outright and have their votes counted or creating additional barriers. We thought we were on the road to improving things and opening the door so that people, and we're not talking about people who are not eligible to vote. We're talking people who are absolutely eligible, qualified voters, having to now leap over additional boundaries just to participate in the process and to have their votes counted. What we saw here in Ohio last summer, we saw a bill introduced that would require additional identification. Not that there were not other ways for people to prove who they were. So we're not talking about people who could not prove who they were, but other ways to actually demonstrate that they lived at the address that was on file so that they would be able to cast their ballots and have them count. That actually passed one house, but did not pass the other. But the more important thing that passed last summer was House Bill 194, which had so many different suppressive tactics in it. One of the things that it did was limit the number of days that we had for early voting. If you recall back to 2000 and 2004, there were significantly long lines all over the state, really all over the nation, but particularly here in the state of Ohio, where people stood in the rain for hours on end, and we even had to go to court. So people who had been in line for 6 and 7 hours were told that they could not vote, college students in particular.
It really seemed to jump out at me personally, and for many of the people I knew, Dee, that these lines seem to really be predominant in places like Lorain, Ohio, where I'd spent my entire adult life, African-American communities, as you said, student communities, and frankly, generally communities that were not going to vote for the Republicans that passed this bill, H.R. 194. Is that an incorrect assumption?
I think that is a fair assessment of what we actually saw. It was certainly in areas that were very densely populated. The urban areas are densely populated counties, places where there were a significant number of college aged people voting. For some reason, there were not sufficient voting machines in operation. So the lines, again, were long. So we were able to actually have the laws changed that allowed in 2008, in the last presidential election, we had access to early vote. People could go and vote literally until the day before election in person to a designated location or to their county board of election, cast an absentee ballot, have their ballot actually counted. What we saw in House Bill 194 was the elimination of those days. It actually came through another bill that came after 194, but again, there was a restriction on the number of days for early voting. There were also provisions in that bill that said things like the Board of Election employee could not direct a voter to the right precinct. We know many places there are multiple precincts in individual locations, so if you were supposed to be in Precinct A and you voted in Precinct B, the worker couldn't even tell you, no, actually, you need to go back over to A. So what happened? Your ballot wasn't counted.
Let's just stop on that one for a second. I know people that are very honest, decent, progressive-minded people that were saying, you know, that have heard some of this and said, well, gee, I carry an ID. Why shouldn't he have an ID? Well, what on earth would having your voter aid at the voting booth give you directions to the correct poll, how would that help eliminate voting fraud? Or in any way, I mean, was there any logic to this at all?
I'm so glad you asked that question. We certainly, when we talked about last summer, House Bill 159, the voter ID bill, as well as House Bill 194, there was a lot of discussion that we need to do these things to eliminate fraud. We have not seen the evidence of fraud. There were, I think, 4 or 8 cases out of millions of ballots cast where it actually was a case of fraud that was actual demonstrated fraud. That was in Ohio.
So we've had,
you know,
the maximum, if we take the maximum, there were 8 people.
Yeah. .0004%. I mean, it's so, you know, small. We can't say that we have a problem. The problem that we've had, if we want to talk about voting, is that people who legitimately cast their ballots did not get their ballots cast. We even saw this happen play out in Hamilton County. We just had a decision last week that said you had to go ahead and count provisional ballots that were cast in a juvenile judge race. It's ridiculous. 2010 didn't get decided literally until last week in 2012.
What you're saying is something that we'd heard anecdotally and seen in print in some cases, that instead of eliminating voter fraud, that actually there had been extensive cases of actual voter denial that have gone on in the last few years.
Absolutely. The suppression used to be just kind of procedurally, and we'll say that maybe some things were done in error. Let's assume that maybe some people were honest and it was done in error. It's a very difficult task to be a poll worker, and we understand that maybe a person got directed to the wrong place. But why do we have a General Assembly that should be opening the process again to qualified voters instead putting additional barriers in place? It just doesn't make any sense. And what's even more interesting to me, when we talk about these last 3 days before election, there's not a legislator yet who has been willing to stand up and say it was actually my intent to eliminate those last 3 days. They claimed that it was, you know, a drafting issue when legislation House Bill 224 was drafted, and they had to harmonize the language, which is not an uncommon thing to do. But this is a real policy change. This was not a technical amendment. This was a policy change to say that we're going to eliminate those last 3 days. If we look at the 2008 presidential election in particular, more than 93,000 people voted those last 3 days before the election.
And 93,000.
So how can we say to those individuals, folks that work 2 and 3 jobs just to support their families, people who, you know, they've got to get their kids somewhere, maybe they're taking care of a sick loved one, they want to go in, they don't want to stand in line for 8 and 9 hours on election day, but they can go the Sunday before election, they can go the Monday before election because it works with their schedule and they want to participate in our republic and our democracy. Why would we take that away, particularly when nobody's willing to stand up and take ownership that this is what they're really doing? But in practice, we are taking away people's opportunity to cast their ballots.
Well, you know, one of the things that has struck me is that throughout my entire life, I've heard, you know, the public discourse has been one where it's a bipartisan effort that we want to expand voting rights, that we want more people to participate. And this certainly strikes me, and I think yourself as well, as a very conscious effort not to expand participation in our democratic institutions, but to restrict them.
Bruce, I would have to say that that's true. In fact, there's an organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council.
I'm so glad you brought them up.
There you go.
That's Alec.
Alec. It's called Alec. It's for the American Legislative Exchange Council. They actually had it's an organization primarily of corporations that create model legislation, and they pretty much shop it around the entire nation, and we've seen the identical language introduced in state after state after state. So they really are the entity that is behind House Bill 194, and they also incidentally were the entity that was behind Senate Bill 5, which was another issue that the people rose up and said, we don't want to see this.
Well, to be devil's advocate here, or to ask a legitimate question, maybe. Alec, is Alec an Ohio grassroots lobbying group What is, Alec, you said it's made up of corporations. Is it Ohio corporations? There small holders involved in this?
No.
Who is this?
No, these are, major, major league, super wealthy corporations, those that, tend to fight against.
The Koch brothers are a major entity.
And one of the gentlemen that founded the organization who rest his soul, he's now deceased, but he actually said, elections aren't won by the majority. They're won by the majority of people who show up. And the fewer people that show up, the better chance we have to influence the outcome. So, and I'm paraphrasing his words, but, obviously that is a sentiment that is as real today as when he made it, back in the early 2000s. So we want to make certain that people understand this is an orchestrated effort. It's not just happening in Ohio. It's not happening in isolation. And these are, people like the Koch brothers who want to make certain that more barriers are created to the average person so that they don't get to vote or they don't get to have their vote count. Well, that's the bottom line.
Just to cover one of the other points, I know many of us have heard, again, from, pretty honest folks that maybe don't understand the issue entirely, would come up and say, well, gee, hey, I had to show my driver's license to get to cash my check or some other issue. Why shouldn't I have to show my ID to vote?
Again, nobody is saying don't show your ID to vote. What we had... what we have currently still in law, though there is a piece of legislation that would change it, is to give people some different alternatives. We have people who don't drive anymore, so maybe they don't have a driver's license, or maybe they never had a driver's license because they didn't. We have older people who don't have a birth certificate because maybe they weren't born in a hospital.
Well, just
how
to
can
stop
they
you
get...
for a second, mm-hmm. You mentioned people that don't drive. Mm-hmm. I know I spent a few years in Chicago and mm-hmm. had mm-hmm. Have to go to New York regularly mm-hmm. for large meetings. And when we did that, there are a lot of people that find having an automobile is actually an impediment rather than a positive in some of those big cities because they have major well-developed public transport. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And all we're saying is that there are ways that people can prove that they're who they are. It doesn't have to be a state-issued ID. And if you're going to have a state-issued ID, why don't you accept something like one that's given to you're a student at Ohio State University or Ohio University? For some reason, they exclude those things. So you are part of a state institution. Nobody's going to give me an Ohio State University ID and I haven't proven who I am. I mean, let's be realistic about that. And then again, if you're a college student or you're a person, who maybe is not of wealth or you've gone through a difficult time and you've lost your home due to foreclosure and you've got to move, maybe you can't afford to go and purchase a new ID that now shows this is the address where you reside, but you've got a telephone bill or you've got an electric company bill. They wanted to take those kind of things away. So, again, why are we doing these things that are creating barriers as opposed to giving people greater access?
Well, just so we clarify, the bill, 194 bill, says you have to show an ID, and they're saying if you...
It's not 194. That's in House Bill 159. Mm, that's in 159.
Mm-hmm. But the voter suppression bills that are being passed are saying that you have to show this ID. Suppose somebody has a veteran's ID, and I've seen where people mm-hmm. that serve their country that, mm-hmm. that have been even wounded in mm-hmm. battle are now retired can't mm-hmm. use a veteran's ID. I understand they're saying that if they won't let you use a particular type of ID, you can purchase another kind of ID?
Basically, the bill does not afford any resources for you to get the ID. Some other states that have required a photo ID as part of their, access to voting, they have actually provided resources to make certain that voters have that. The Ohio bill does not include.
So actually, what you're saying is that even if you're, a veteran and, mm-hmm. and don't have a driver's license, you can't use your veteran's ID as well?
That would be one of the types of identification that you could use if House Bill 159 passes. So that at least is fortunate that that is included. But there are certainly
what are
others.
What are some of the ones that we know that people use regularly? You mentioned the student ID. What are some of the ones, Dee, that have been turned down by people?
Well, officially it hasn't been turned down because the bill hasn't passed, so okay. We don't want to characterize it in that particular way. But, if you're a state employee, for example, you may have a state employee ID that has your photograph on it. If the point is I want to make certain Bruce is Bruce, so I'm looking at the picture of Bruce, it's him. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't that suffice? Mm-hmm. You know, Bruce is taking a class at Ohio State University or Columbus State Community College. Why wouldn't that particular photo ID suffice? You know, there are other sort of quote-unquote government-issued IDs mm-hmm. that people do have, but maybe it's not issued by the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. If you moved here, you know, from another state, you're now registered. You're actually on the voter registration rolls. You've registered. You're at your address, you know, 1234 Street, whatever, wherever you live, and you've got an ID because you just moved here from, you know, say you moved here from Michigan. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing is proving that I am the person that actually showed up. And then right now under current law, here I've got a bill that says this is the place where I reside. Why wouldn't that suffice? It just doesn't make sense that we would want to make people go through these things. And again, we've seen here in Ohio and in other states, people, they've shown up with the right ID and they've had problems. But again, that's not the biggest problem that we have right now. The biggest problem that we have right now are the provisions that are in House Bill 194 that we're trying to repeal. And it has qualified for the ballot because those are the things that are just draconian and just really, really are going to suppress people's votes.
Well, why don't we go into that a little bit? You said you're the outreach coordinator for the AFL-CIO right now. Mm-hmm. As such, you're working on the voter suppression fight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Pretty much that's your
yes,
main fight.
That's
but
mm-hmm.
just so we understand,
sure.
The AFL-CIO is not doing this by themselves.
Absolutely. We actually have been working in concert with Fair Elections Ohio, which is the entity that brought the referendum to the people to actually repeal House Bill 194. Back in the summer, in the early fall, they collected more than 300,000 ballot signatures and submitted them to the Secretary of State, and we qualified for the ballot. Here in the last couple of weeks, there have been a flurry of activity because we saw the General Assembly introduce a bill, Senate Bill 295, that would partially, though they say fully, but in fact partially repeal House Bill 194.
What are some of the other organizations that have joined in and show interest in this?
I think you have, almost every fair election group, good government group that you can think of, the League of Women Voters, they've been involved, State Voices, they've, tried to share information, the ACLU has been watching this issue, the NAACP, the list really goes on and on. It's really, those people that care about people having the opportunity and the right to vote.
Student groups,
absolutely. And in fact, today, there was a press conference this morning, faith leaders came out this morning saying that, we really need to be restoring these last 3 days before election. Because
I just had talked with some of the leaders of the Alliance for Retired Americans
who were at that.
And,
they were there as well.
They spoke pretty extensively on how retired folks and mm-hmm. seniors are also badly affected.
Absolutely.
By these.
Absolutely.
This coalition has won some victories it's kind of forced those that are trying to pass this sort of mm-hmm. legislation into mm-hmm. a bit of a defensive position. At this
right.
point, you'd say.
We were able to push the envelope enough 2 weeks ago that they held off on the vote. It actually passed the Senate and was on the floor of the House. And we were able to convince them to give us some time to try to work out a deal, basically, that would restore the last 3 days back to early voting. And, and maybe everybody can go home happy. The reality is nobody's claiming ownership of this, taking those 3 days away. So let's fix that. Mm-hmm. And, if that were fixed, then we really would be having a conversation about a true repeal of House Bill 194. Right now, the conversation, it's a false statement to say 295 is a true repeal of House Bill 194 because it does not reset the law to what it was prior to 194 being enacted.
Well, again, I'm a retired steel worker, and I had worked in the civil rights movement and labor movement many, many years ago for a long time. But I remember, as a young person, that the fight was won to expand voting rights. Mm-hmm. And that people, not just in the South, but across our nation, fought and mm-hmm. literally died
yes.
for the right to vote.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it just seems ridiculous that we're now in a situation where it's become a partisan issue and people mm-hmm. are trying to deny certain people the right to vote.
It seems so fundamental, Bruce. I am amazed that, you know, in my lifetime, I've watched the pendulum swing to the place that people are trying to deny folks in the United States of America the right to vote. We go to other nations and, you know, try to help bring democracy there, but then we're playing games right here in our own land to keep certain people out of voting. And it doesn't make any sense. It's unconscionable to me that we're
actually
in this fight.
Yes. Actually, again, part of the public discourse had been that I've heard over the years has been that our democracy, as compared to other democracies, and we are not the only one in the world, mm-hmm. that other industrialized countries and other democratic nations have a much, much higher level of participation in voting mm-hmm. than we do without passing votes to restrict.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. I mean, unfortunately, we have a system, you know, those of us who have been fighting this fight and trying to make certain that we are expanding rights as opposed to limiting rights, you know, we're being accused of playing partisan games and things of that nature. And I'm just appalled that we would be demonized for saying, absolutely, we want everybody who is eligible to be able to go and vote and have their vote counted. Why shouldn't we be driving up voter participation? We should be doing everything we can to make certain that everybody who can vote votes, making certain that everybody who's eligible to be registered gets registered and shows up and casts their ballot. It doesn't make any sense to me why that's a negative thing.
Well, one thing that I read about recently that was interesting was to just put in a shameless plug. Michelle Alexander recently did a book. She's a Ohio State prof called The New Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. And one of those many little sound bites that jumped out at me was that she spoke about how the Jim Crow laws were actually not specific, were gender or race non-specific in their writing. Mm-hmm. In other words, the Jim Crow laws did not say black folks can't vote. They said everybody has to pass a literacy test or mm-hmm. everybody has to pay a poll tax. Mm-hmm. And this strikes me somewhat similarly that, mm-hmm. well, we're not mm-hmm. saying African Americans or seniors or youth can't vote. We're just saying you got to buy the poll tax ID. Is that a fair analogy?
I think when you're talking about IDs as the bill is currently written, absolutely. It's nothing but a poll tax. You're not providing the resources so that people can get this ID since you're restricting it to a particular type, then absolutely it's a poll tax. No question it's a poll tax. And, you know, and I think, you know, the thing that we have to remember, and I'm glad you brought up Dr. Alexander's book, you know, we will continue to put resources into incarcerating people, creating more beds in jails, not putting resources into, you know, the type of rehabilitative programs that we know work, resources into mental health, which is the reason why a lot of people have, you know, some of the problems that lead them to crime, and we're not addressing those things. And we make certain we have enough room for everybody to come into that particular house, but we don't want to bring them into the house of democracy. And that is something that just does not make any sense. You know, in 2012, we should not even be having this discussion and this conversation about anything that would be limiting people's right to vote. You know, 2000, there was a lawsuit that was brought by the League of Women Voters of Ohio on behalf of the voters of the state after the 2000 and 2004 election. We came up with better solutions. 2008 was a much more smooth election. We did not have the embarrassment that we saw in 2000 and 2004. People did not stand in lines as long as they did those two previous presidential election cycles. It was a system that worked. We took a system that worked and had some people, based on model legislation from ALEC, say, hey, we got to do something about this, and let's make it more difficult for people to vote because they don't believe that voting is a right. They really seem to take the position that voting is a privilege, and you know, I will continue to fight that till my dying day. And I'm glad I'm here with the Ohio AFL-CIO, being able to work with other partners in the community to continue to carry that message that we believe voting is a fundamental right, and we need to do all we can to allow people to participate in that process and not create barriers.
Well, Jesse Jackson said you're either going to pay at the beginning or pay at the end. And Dr. King said that as long as the arc of history is very long, but it tends to bend toward justice. But I think what we found is it bends toward justice when we bend it.
Absolutely. So we got to keep up the fight.
Let me close out. I want to thank you so much for allowing our listeners to hear this discussion, Deidre. And I think it goes without saying that this is a fight that's long, that's not near finished, and that we've got a lot going on. Mm-hmm. If folks want to be involved in this, mm-hmm. I would assume they could mm-hmm. get involved through their union, through the Labor Federation. But if they want to reach you or reach the sure. Voting Suppression Coalition, are sure. there particular contact sure. numbers, Facebook sure. IDs that you sure. could give us? Could you repeat?
Sure. I'm going to give you my phone number. You can call me here at the Ohio AFL-CIO. The phone number is 614-224-8271. My cell phone number is 614.
And
ask for Deidre Reese. Yeah. My cell phone number is 614-312-0175.
Do you want to repeat those, please?
614-224-8271. Ask for Deidre Reese. Or call me directly on my cell at 614-312-0175, and we will get you right involved.
Well, Dean, can't tell you how much it's been a real pleasure to work with you, and that's going to continue. And I think that arc of history is going to get bent toward justice by folks like yourself and millions of, literally thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of people that are going to fight for those rights that people have fought and died for.
Absolutely. We can win.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dean.